This is the Unstoppable Authors podcast with world-building warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable.
Welcome to episode 188 of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. Today, I'm chatting with Shelley Zev all about turning your passion into a business. But first up, a personal update. If you listened to last week's podcast where Julia interviewed me, you'll know that I've just started to do hand-drawn fantasy map commissions. People have asked for so long for me to do this, and it finally feels like the universe wants me to as well. Because I've had some weird synchronicity things happen, and yeah, the world just seems to be nudging me towards doing this. So I've finally given in. I am. So yeah, if you want a bespoke hand-drawn map for your books, I do that now. And it really feels like the right time because I've concurrently decided to take a step back from writing fiction. Now, I will always write fiction simply because I have to. It's not a choice. The stories irritate me until I let them out. But it's not going to be a priority for a while, which mostly happened accidentally, actually. At the end of 2022, I did my usual look back over my achievements for the year and discovered, with total surprise and shock, that I didn't publish any fiction at all in 2022. And do you know what? I didn't receive loads of angry emails. I didn't become hated, and the sky didn't collapse. The world carried on turning like it always has. And I realised that all the pressure I've ever put on myself was entirely of my own making. So for myself, I'm focusing on what I want to focus on right now. And for my business and my family, I'm focusing on what makes money and pays the bills. And it's not going to bring about the apocalypse. It's not going to make the world implode. It's fine. As creators, I think we mount a lot of internal pressure onto ourselves, telling ourselves that it's actually external pressure, especially in a culture that promotes productivity over absolutely everything else. And I believe, as women in particular, who exist in a culture that tells us to put the needs of everyone else before our own. And this decision to ease off the pressure to write fiction feels right and it feels good. And I just have to keep reminding myself that the world is not going to fall apart because of it. No new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of our current patrons who sponsor this show. We appreciate all of your support so much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the podcast. If you'd like to join in and also support the show, you can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And our monthly sessions of Sprints and Giggles, an evening where we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh, are open to all of our listeners. To get the link to join in, just make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter or a member of our Facebook group. Hi, Shelley. Thank you so much for joining me here today. So first up, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for having me. So my name is Shelley. I'm an editor, part-time librarian, and the other half of my slogan that I usually have on my website says general book enthusiast. So just generally, if it's related to books or literature, I'm all about it.
I love that. So you describe yourself as being way too passionate about literature. So have you always been a keen reader, and what led you to your favorite genres?
So this is a great question because I haven't always been a keen reader. Every time I hear authors or editors or just anyone who works with books, they always say, oh, when I was 3 years old, I wrote a short story and now I have it like framed at my parents' house. And when I visit them, I like giggle at how embarrassing it was. But that's how I knew I always wanted to be a writer. I don't have that. So I actually started reading when I was in high school. I think at the time I was just perhaps like all high schoolers, a little bit lonely. I felt misunderstood. I wasn't, you know how teenagers are. They're just like, yeah, I'm sure you know very well. It's just like, I relate to nothing. No one gets me. So of course I turned to one place that's always there, which is books. And I just fell in love with books and I just started reading. So for that reason, YA books have always, like teen novels have always been like one of my favorite genres. Of course, now as an adult, I like stray a little bit and I like to read, of course, like nonfiction sometimes, and like adult romances are always some of my favorites. But in general, there's just something so comforting about that teen journey for me.
No, I completely agree. So I'm a little bit older than you, and YA didn't really exist when I was that age. But as an adult, I love it because it's comfort reading, because the way it's written, it's like slightly gentler than adult fiction, I find. So yeah, I find it really comforting. So often when I've read maybe like a really gritty dystopian or like some Stephen King, I often go and read a YA, like John Green is one of my favorites. Because it's just like, it's like a comfort blanket.
For sure. It's almost like a palate cleanser. In between the harsh realities of the world, you're like, I need something in between just to like refresh my mind.
Yeah, definitely. And there's like a lot of embarrassment out there among adults who read YA, and it's such a shame. Don't be embarrassed if you're an adult and you read YA books. You're allowed. Yes.
Of course. And I think actually, this is sidetracking a little bit, but publishers know that, right? So they release YA because, if you think about it, teenagers don't have buying power. It's the adults who read YA that do. That's why YA is actually so marketable and so interesting for adults, because it's adults who read them. You want to think teenagers, and you want your book to be in school libraries, which is really important. And I always love hearing stories of authors, you know, that write books for their teenage self, or like, this is a book I wish I had a teenage me. Those are so important. But part of the, you know, business side of the industry is that the reality is that they're pitching it to adults to buy, whether they're buying it for themselves or for schools or for teenagers in their lives. So it's not embarrassing at all. It's actually, the business is built that way for adults. So if you have shame about it, don't.
So on a daily basis, you are absolutely surrounded by books and literature in a number of different professional capacities. So what are all the different things that you do, and how do they complement one another?
So this is such an interesting question, because like I mentioned, I'm an editor and also a librarian, and I feel like there's two different reading hats as a librarian. You know, I'm reading not as much for research because I work in public libraries, so I'm usually reading for fun or reading about books that are coming out just so I know what to recommend to the library customers that walk in to the branch and want to see something new. But as an editor, I really read, you know, more in depth and definitely word by word very carefully, which I think is so different. I like to say that I always read for readability, which is sort of like, even as an editor, I want to read something and I want to know, is it clear to me from the lens of a consumer, from a user, from a reader? Do I actually enjoy this work? But part of that too is I have to distill it word by word to make sure that the author's message is coming across. But when I read in my librarian role, I just read for fun. Honestly, I can't read at work as much as I want to. People always have a misconception that like the librarians are like sitting at the desk reading, or when they're not on the floor, they're like at the back reading. We don't do that as much as I wish I could. So I generally am. I'm like always surrounded by books, and it's fun. I like it, but it definitely requires sort of two different mentalities depending on what I'm doing.
That's really interesting, because one of the things that authors say a lot is that once they've start learning about like plot devices and all story dynamics and the way that stories are put together, that it ruins reading for them, because they can't read as a reader anymore. They read as an author. But you say that you have managed to split that, so you can still read for fun.
Yes. So it's interesting. Sometimes when I read, like I was reading a really popular romance series recently that was like blew up on TikTok. It's on Kindle Unlimited, about these billionaires. Anyway, I don't need to go into the details, but it was very addicting. But even as I'm reading it, like I found it enjoyable because what was going to happen? Like, it's a billionaire romance series. We all know the plot. We know what's going to happen. I know the author is setting up foreshadowing by, mentioning the billionaire's like long lost like mother. Something's going to happen in the future, but that doesn't mean it's not fun to read. You can enjoy the characters, the character development, the plot. Even if you see it from the lens of like, this is from a crafting lens, you could still appreciate, oh, I understand why this was done in a crafting way, but I think the author is smart for doing that. So you can find enjoyment in doing sort of both versions of reading.
Yeah, and often when I'm reading something for like the academic understanding of it, I find myself so lost in it that I'm like, oh, I forgot to I forgot to be keeping an eye on this, or like,
Yes.
I'm using little sticky tabs to mark out sentences, and I realize I've read a whole chapter without putting any in, and I'm like, oh, no, I got lost.
Yes, that totally happens for me too. Sometimes, rarely, but sometimes I'm reading something I'm editing, and then I get like 2 pages further, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to go back and reread because I just got lost in it.
So you've actually made a business out of your passion for books, which is it's an absolute dream for many writers and a lot of our listeners, but it isn't always smooth sailing because many writers find that the business side of things actually dulls their enjoyment of creating. And I have a lot of friends who are artists and lots of different creators, and they often find the same, that as soon as you make it into a business, that they lose the fun. So how do you make sure that you keep your excitement for literature alive?
So this is a great question because I've definitely struggled with this myself. And I think any person who's creative, they once they realize, oh, I have skills and talents in a certain field, why do a job I'm unhappy with? Let me pursue my passions. And sometimes that eats away at their love of passions. So I think this is a great question. And I don't know if I have the right answer for it for you, but generally speaking, I think finding something that, hold on, I'm pausing here because I want to make sure I get my words right. I think blocking out specific time for specific tasks really works for me. I definitely have a bit of a work-life balance issue because I just really enjoy my work and like I always want to be doing it. But I know that it's unhealthy for me to do that and for me to like fully invest all my time into one thing. So I think part of it is just finding a balance between always working and having some time for enjoyment. I also find that reading things that are just like totally out of the genre of what I'm working on really helps. So when I'm in between editing projects, I'll usually read something that like a genre or book that I haven't read in a while. I also read a lot of graphic novels and manga, which I have no connections in that industry at all. As much as I would love to edit manga, it's just not something that's like possible for me because I don't speak Japanese. So I feel like part of that too, of like finding a genre that you just like don't relate to, can't make money out of it, just something so separate but somewhat related to the field really helps. And I also find that if I'm ever stuck, the great thing about being a creative person that owns their own business is that you can take breaks when you want. So as much as, I mean, of course I still have bills and rent and all these things to pay, but if I can take a break, like an extra half day afternoon to walk around and explore the city or do something of that nature, then I will do that because I realize that that's one of few perks of working for yourself is that, oh, I work for myself. No one's going to tell me when to do. So it's both the pro and the con of the business, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because you have to be accountable for yourself, but absolutely, you can have that flexibility. I like that you say that you go for a walk around the city, because that's what I'm like. If I'm blocked and stuck, I have to get out of the house. I have to go and walk. I'm very lucky that we live right on the edge of a very, very long river,
Oh,
and
nice.
yeah, so I can just step out my house and just one street away, I'm on the river, so I can walk along there. But yeah, getting out of the environment where I work, because sometimes it's hard when you work from home
yes.
to make that cut.
Yes.
So yeah, getting out of my workplace is so important to me. So I like that you say that as well.
Yeah, I really agree with that and relate to that as well. I love doing walks. I wasn't a huge fan of them, to be honest, before I started working on my own business. And especially when COVID hit, I think we see a lot of like TikToks and videos of like people are like going on my daily mental health walk. And I was like, I don't need that. I realize now that I think we all need that. Mm. And it actually does work. And if I'm ever in my own head, sometimes I step out and I do a walk. This is actually something that one of my clients mentioned to me before, because she's very conscious of like work-life balance and, you know, doing things during a business hour as opposed to on your personal time, which is what I appreciate. But she said something to me once that I think I try to remember at least once a week. I say this to myself, but she says, it's just books. It's not heart surgery. We're not like, we are changing lives, but you know, we're not on the operating room floor. So if it needs an extra day or two, and you need to step away from it, that's totally normal. And yeah. I feel like that's something that as creative folks, everything, especially when you're in the heat of the moment, you're anxious, you're worried, what am I going to do next? And all these thoughts feel like the end of the world when really it isn't. And I feel that way sometimes too, when I have all these deadlines or I have all these things I want to do and I have all these ideas. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there isn't enough time in the day for me to do all this. And then I take a step back. I go on a walk and I realize, okay, you know what, Shelley, it's not that deep. Take the time.
Yeah, definitely. Just that break and doing something physical instead of something mental.
Yes.
Really helps. Cause so I always say I solve all of my plot holes and my problems by doing the washing up. So yeah, because it's just so it's something physical. And I know other people who clean as well and people who exercise and all the wholesome people that do things like cleaning and exercising.
Oh, for sure. Not just one, but both.
Yeah. So what are the challenges that you have faced in turning your love of books into a business?
Oh, this is a good question. I think part of the challenge, I've been reading a lot of business books lately, and I think something that's seems to come up often at the beginning, at least, is always mindset. So the first step is always just moving from, I like this term that I heard recently, it's called procrastinate research, I think. So you're procrastinating by doing research, right? Instead of actually, for example, writing the book, you're researching, how do I get an agent? How do I self-publish? How do I do this? You're imagining all the big picture things, but you haven't done the actual action of writing the book. So that's part of it too, where I think I spent so much time just in that procrastinate research phase, or just even in small things. Like, for example, I'm starting my newsletter now, a year into my business. And I've been thinking about it, I want to say since like January, but it's taking me like 5 months because I'm trying to find out, you know, what's the best platform to use? What email service should I use? Should I redo my whole website while I'm at it? So all these things, you're stuck in the research phase without doing the action. And I think one of the challenges, you have to move into the action. You have to be brave enough to do that. And I think this message not only applies for business owners, but also just authors or any creative person in general. If you're thinking about all the different things that you could be doing and you're always imagining, you know, I could sell this piece of art, or I could sell my books, I could submit this short story to this contest, but you need to actually, you know, execute the idea first for you to go to that phase. And I think this has been said many times in a various different combination, but by many different people, but you can always edit a poorly written piece of work, but you can't edit a blank page, right? So I think that's part of it, is just the mindset is just one of the challenges. And then of course the other challenges of just the practicality of it, of finding clients, I know is always a problem for editors. Thankfully I have a very great network that for me, at least right now, hasn't been too much of a challenge. But of course my calendar is not fully booked. So if you would like to get in touch, please do so. But you know, just things of that nature. But I think the mindset is just something that everyone can relate to in terms of having all these grand ideas and putting them into action is just really the first step. And I think part of that is also recognizing that it's okay not to be perfect the first time.
Yes.
Because you're doing all this research because you want to get it right. But sometimes, again, like this has been said many times, getting it done is sometimes better than getting it done perfectly.
That right. That is like one of my mottos that I say. Mm-hmm. I say it to myself because it's something that I have to keep reminding myself. But I say it to everyone I know as well who's struggling. I'm like, done is better than perfect.
Exactly. Because at least it's done and then you can worry about it because you can always perfect it later.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this question is purely for my own interest because regular listeners to this podcast will know that I am an absolute first draft enthusiast. I love writing first drafts, but I hate editing. I hate the editing process and I wish that I could enjoy it more. And I really envy those authors who do. So what is it that you love about editing? And actually, is it different editing someone else's work rather than your own?
So this is a great question. I actually do love editing because it is easier than editing my own work. So I've written a few books myself. None are out in the universe just because probably my own mindset. I probably need to, you know, change my thinking about my own level of perfection, but alas, none of them are out there. But it is easier for me to edit other people's work. But I find that it's because I want to make the work perfection is part of it. Of course, you want it to be error-free, but part of it too is I want it to be enjoyable. I want it to appeal to other people. I don't want to just edit it for this. Yes, perfection, of course, is important, but you want to make sure that it's an enjoyable experience because the book is something that's so close to the author's heart that you want to make sure that they're getting the message that they want across done well. So that's part of it. I find it easier to edit other people's work. And the other part of it that's so fun is that I just love reading so much that I'm always excited when I see a new book, a new concept, something I haven't thought of before. That idea is exciting. And then the idea that I can help make it better is even more exciting. So I actually find the first draft most daunting because it's taking all these like abstract ideas and putting them down on paper. And it's always the editing that's more fun because now that I have the ideas done, how can I make my message better? How can I really show people what I'm trying to say here? So that's part of it, of why it's so fun and exciting for me.
Yeah. I love that, like, we're all built differently. And there are us people who just love the chaos of the first draft and hate the editing bit. And then there are other people who really struggle with that chaotic first draft, but love the polishing of it in the editing process. But that's the wonderful thing. And that's why we have things like professional editors and critique partners so that we can match up what, like, the bits that we don't like and pass them on to people who love those bits.
Oh, for sure. I love that. For sure.
It's so good. So one thing that authors are often confused by are the different types of editing services available to them. So can you give us a rundown of the different kinds of edits that authors can get and how they differ from one another?
Oh, of course, I'd be happy to. So in generally speaking, you always kind of see three big phases of editing, which is, of course, developmental editing. Then you have copy editing or sometimes line editing. And then the last one is the proofreader. So the developmental editing, it's right there in the name. It's all about the development of the book. So this usually looks for the big picture ideas, like the characters, the plot, the overall writing style. So let's say you have a fantasy book, you've given it to some beta readers, which are, of course, your very early readers that read sort of the messy draft and help you work through that. But they say, you know, there's this huge plot hole or there's just something that's not quite right. Perhaps you need more help. So you take it to a developmental editor. That editor will really help you sort of nail down the big picture and fix the plot holes that way. Next, once you sort of have the base of the book down, I like to think of it as sort of building a house. So I always think of the developmental editing as sort of like the foundation. Once you have your foundation of the book, the story, the plot, you know, the action, what's actually going on in the book, then you can move on to copy editing and line editing, which is sort of building the walls, making sure that all the sentences are clear. So copy editing and line editing is for style, grammar, and just really line by line edits just to make sure that all the sentences are proper sentences, the grammar is correct. Style sometimes confuses authors and even editors sometimes, or new editors, in terms of what that means. But that just means that all the words or all the spelling you're using follows the same consistent dictionary, and that the sentences or any references are laid out in a specific style. So the most popular one, of course, is the Chicago Manual of Style. Mm. And then lastly, proofreading is like that last check, like your book is done. Like you are like, I am ready to hit publish. This is going on the storefront. But you want to make sure that you didn't miss anything after your copy edits. So the proofreader really goes down detail by detail and just double checks using the style guide that you've given them, or just the style that or dictionary that you've told them that you're using. And they just check and make sure that everything follows that style. And usually this is the round where you would see the least amount of content changes. Proofreading is usually just like, the book is set. I've said everything I want to say. Now I just want to make sure it looks clean before I publish it.
Yeah, catching all those pesky typos.
Exactly, exactly. Because you would think that with so many people or just so many times reading the same thing over and over and over again, that you wouldn't miss anything, but you actually do. I often see sometimes authors asking for the same person to sort of be their developmental editor, their copy editor, and their proofreader. They want someone to do them all at once, which I understand the appeal of doing that. And I think part of that is really smart because you want to build a relationship with someone you trust. But I actually think the proofreading sometimes should be done by a separate individual, just because if you've done all the work on this book and you've worked with this author for so long, by the time you get to the end, it might be, you know, the 12th or 14th time that you're reading that book and you just might miss that typo.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, typos slip through. We all read books that just have little typos in. They're pesky.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Now that I've worked as an editor for quite a while, even when I'm reading for fun, sometimes my editing brain goes off. I read a sentence and I'm like, oh, I think that sentence is not quite right. I don't think that's what they meant.
Yeah, even as an author who hates editing, I do that as well.
Oh, for sure.
So beyond offering editing services, you also consult with authors about the publishing industry. So obviously the arrival of self-publishing was such a humongous shakeup in the industry. But what about now? What kinds of shifts are happening in publishing or in book trends? And how might it affect independent authors?
So this is a great question. I actually think, I know you said when self-publishing first started, it like shook up the industry. I still think it's doing that. Mm. I still think now, you know, as much as the world is sort of inundated with new books being published daily, I do still think that self-publishing is still such a great way to go, just because of the control that you have over your own book and the ways in which you can decide what you want to do with it. So I've experienced in the regular publishing side, and I've decided to sort of go independent because part of it is that traditional publishing takes so long. Mm-hmm. It takes you years to write your book, years to get an agent, years for you and your agent to further craft the book, and then years, or like sometimes maybe if you're lucky, a few months for the agent to sell the book. And then once you have that book deal, it's all shiny on Publishers Weekly. You can screenshot it, share it to Instagram, but then the book is coming out 2 years later. So the traditional publishing journey just takes forever. So I do think self-publishing is still very innovative and still something that is definitely desirable. But I want to say in general, some trends or something that the publishing industry is now interested in, I want to say is AI and artificial intelligence. I feel like that's just the talk of the town, no matter what industry you're in. I know it's part of the writer's strike in Hollywood and just things of that nature. I am optimistic about the fact that AI cannot replace human creativity. I don't think we're at that point. I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. I think there's something to be said about human created stories because they speak to our emotions.
Yeah.
And AI can't do that. But on the positive side for authors is that AI tools, if you think of them as tools and not human replacements, they can sometimes be useful in doing things. So I know people like to use like Grammarly, Pro Writing Aid, things of those nature. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Might be controversial for an editor to say. I know lots of editors who are like anti-AI and very, you know, believe that human editors are the way to go, which I do believe as well. I do think you need that human editor just to double check, but you can use AI as a tool to give you suggestions. I think the thing where authors go wrong is when they rely on these AI tools to sort of do the work for them and then they don't have to think.
Yeah.
But part of being a human is that we have the ability to think and we can reject the suggestions. So just like you can reject an editor's suggestion for your book, you can also reject the suggestion of the AI tools. So that's sometimes where authors probably struggle, is figuring out, you know, which suggestion is valid and which one is incorrect. And in that case, of course, that's when the human editor comes in and fixes that up for them. But you can, but I do think there's a positive trend of AI being used as tools to help people just think more critically about their editing process.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I use Pro Writing Aid. I'm a big fan of Pro Writing Aid. But yeah, sometimes it makes a suggestion and I'm like, nope. Yeah. Definitely not. But then sometimes my human editor, you have to call people that now, don't you?
Because, yes.
Because of the rise right now. My human editor, who happens to be a human.
Exactly.
I'll reject some of his suggestions as well. Yeah. So
exactly. So I think AI is the talk of the town, and I think it can be useful. But the way I like to think about it is, while there is definitely some fear in writers and in editors of sort of like jobs being taken away, I don't think it will take away jobs. I think it will shift the nature of that work.
Yes.
And then using it as a tool rather than just, you know, the end all be all. So I think there's a way that we can see it sort of like as a positive merge. It might take some time, and perhaps for shorter form content, you might see human, like copywriting, I know, is an industry that's really in flux because of AI. But in terms of editing or just, you know, pure like creation, especially on a fiction or like a book side, even if you're a nonfiction author, there's a way you can leverage those tools in a way to help you, but not necessarily replace other work that may need to be done.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there, because it got me thinking while you were speaking about how, and this has been the case for probably about a decade, maybe even more than that the best way to build a really solid business that is sort of as much everything proof as you can make it is to diversify. So to have multiple streams of income, so that if one of them goes down, then you've still got the rest, you know. And this has been the case for a very long time, and I think that the introduction of AI is actually going to make this more important, that people are pulling from every skill set they have so that they can create those multiple streams of income, so that when one shifts, their business is still proofed from that change because they've got these other streams of income.
For sure.
Yeah. It was interesting. That just popped into my head while you were speaking there. And I was like, yeah. And I think as AI develops, that's what we're going to see a lot of people proofing their business from changes by diversifying what they do.
So. I think so. And I think part of it too is that people are going to have to start being more creative in terms of how they sort of position their brand or their voice. And I think it's interesting for authors. I think they can, there's some AI that will definitely help in terms of actually like marketing copy. Or just, I know so many authors who are like, oh, I hate to market. I don't know what to say about my book. I'm so shy, all this stuff. They might actually be able to use those tools to create pitches or things of that nature that can really just help them and bring their book in front of audiences in a genuine way. So I think there's actually quite a different variety of benefits that you can use with AI. But yeah, I think we're going to see lots of interesting work come out of it, I think, because... Yeah. Part of it too, what I find so interesting about it is that it may help, it can only sort of craft or regenerate content based on your original content. So if you have nothing, you know, as the base, it can make up some things, but it can't make up too much. And it's really interesting. I think in 2 or 3 years, I'm curious to see where the state of everything is with it.
Yeah. And it's interesting watching like people react to it, because like one thing that I've done very consciously is on my Instagram, it used to just be pictures of my desk and coffee. That was my brand, just a coffee cup with a keyboard. But I am very consciously posting photos of my face more because I'm creating that human contact that is missing with any form of AI, and sort of like promoting I'm a human.
Yes. And I actually find that really interesting. I need to do this more myself because I used my Instagram is still like, I want to say like 500 photos of just books. And slowly, slowly, pictures of me are going on there, even though it's under my own name and handle. It's just pictures of books. But I think that's really interesting because studies show that like people trust in you as an author and as a business owner more when you have your when they can put your face to your business and to your name. And people like to see a human story. So I think that's a really great point that you bring up. And I think that's actually something that if authors are thinking of what are new ways that I can promote myself, market myself, if you're comfortable with doing so, you know, posting a selfie from your writing desk, you know, instead of always the picture of your book or like your picture of your book in a bookstore, even the picture of you at a book signing or a picture of you holding up your book will definitely get a lot more interest than just, you know, the flat lay pretty picture of the book, which works, but the selfie of you holding your book is so powerful.
And it does. I noticed my likes shoot up. And the great thing about Instagram is there are filters.
Yes. Even the great thing about Zoom, even on Zoom, there are filters. There's filters
It's
everywhere.
brilliant. See, a
Yeah.
good use of AI.
Exactly. There you go.
So finally, can you let our listeners know where they can find you and your services online?
Of course. So all my services and me are under my name, which is Shelly Zev. So it's Shelly, Shelly, Zed. I'm Canadian, so it's Zed. And then E and V. I'd always like to say V as in vehicle at the end, because when I'm talking on the phone, sometimes people think it's D. And I'm like, no, it's not Zed. It's Zev. As much as it sounds like it. And that's my Instagram handle is also my website, just www.shellyzev.com. Super easy to find me and stalk me and do all the fun things that people like to do on the internet.
Now, before I let you go, we
Yes.
ask all of our guests a would you rather question.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, would you rather read only one book each year, but you remember the whole book, or read 100 books every year, but you remember nothing about any of them?
Oh my gosh. Okay, this is a hard question. I kind of want to go with the second one because even if you don't remember anything about the content of the book, the experience that you feel while reading the book is something I always remember. So I actually read about 200 to 300 books a year. A hundred of them are like graphic novels and manga, like I mentioned earlier. So they count to me, they count as real reading, but they
Definitely.
don't require the same sort of remembering brain power that like a full-length novel does. And when I think back to even some of the full-length novels that I read years ago that I no longer remember as detailed in detail in terms of the plot, I still think of the emotions that I felt. So sometimes I'll recommend like a thriller to someone and I'll be like, this book is amazing. I vaguely remember the plot, but while I was reading it, I remember like I could not put it down. Or there's actually a middle grade book that I've read years ago when I was in university and it was horror, but it was like for 12 to 14, 13 year olds. So you wouldn't think it would be that scary, but I vividly remember I was reading it, waiting for an exam. There was like a thunderstorm going outside. I was at school. I was reading this horror novel for children. I was so terrified. Like I was fully in university, not a child anymore, but I just remember being so scared that I was like, oh my gosh, like who writes like I know this is for children, but like I'm genuinely scared. So I think that even if I forget the content of the books, you know, I don't even remember the plot. I don't remember what happened that made me so terrified, but just that feeling stayed with me. So I feel like if you can remember the emotions of the book, you can still remember that it was an enjoyable read, even if you don't remember the plot. And that's also what like Goodreads and the Storygraph are for. Just like as soon as you finish reading it or while reading it, write down your notes. And then that way I know the plot if I forget
Yeah,
it.
that's good. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming and talking all things books with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Remember that if you want to join us for sprints and giggles, then make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter. And to get all of the additional benefits of supporting the show, you can do so over at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And don't forget to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.